keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario on stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby. Hope you guys enjoyed the intro music. It's from my friends Ponder and XL, some local friends of mine here in San Diego. Make some good music. You can check them out on Bandcamp, YouTube, iTunes, all that good stuff, whatever it's called, I forget.
Diamond Gems.
Diamond Gems, yeah, you can watch them play live locally, too. How's it going? I'm here with my co-host, DB. How's it going, man?
Hey, pretty good, man. Just getting ready for this big State of the Union farce that's going to happen tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern, and I think we need to start playing a drinking checklist, and what we'll do is every time Obama doesn't bring up key points like, oh, the Monsanto Protection Act, the TPP, NDAA 14, and so on and so forth, when those things aren't mentioned, you have to drink a shot, and by the end of the night, you're going to be destroyed.
Oh, no, man, I'll get alcohol poisoning.
Exactly. If you drink every lie and you drink every misleading thing he says, you'll be you'll be alcohol poisoned.
Well, I mean, we could all kind of imagine what's going to be said. It's going to say, you know, he's going to say that, you know, they're doing a good job. The economy is recovering. The Republicans are obstructing Congress.
Right, and he's going to make now he's threatening to pull some dictatorial powers through the NDAA 14, which we all saw coming. And these are going to be things that he's going to do to reverse stuff like the new farm bill cutting food stamps by like almost $1 billion. And now, I don't know if you've seen, but they've even cut unemployment. And I'm not if your 99 weeks are up, but well in advance of that. And there's a lot of people I know even that, you know, they're not getting any unemployment anymore. So what he's going to do is they're going to create this false crisis. He's going to come in and grab power, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, the crisis is already rearing its head, I think.
Yep.
You know, he's going to be patting himself on the back for a bit. Obamacare is going to be drastically, you know, inflated how good Obamacare is doing. And it'd be doing a lot better if the Republicans weren't getting in the way.
Yeah, and the funniest thing about it is Obamacare is being defunded in a lot of states. 26 states, which is, you know, a huge amount. It's more than half, have decided not to go with Medicare. So they have no subsidized health care option at all. Would you have any idea what that might do for the prison system in these states? Because with marijuana legalization on the horizon, they have to replace the prison system with Obamacare debtor prison, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you couldn't really put that out of the question, because if you don't get Obamacare, you would be more or less considered a criminal. So I,
and
you know,
no free option if you're already dirt poor or unemployed, and can't make ends meet. I mean, what's this going to do to homeless? Homeless are required to have Obamacare.
Yeah.
So yep. They're going to come by and ask for their papers and say, hey, you know what? You're not employed. I'm going to need to get your, I'm going to need you to pay your premiums for the last, I don't know, we haven't had you in the system. So 15 years, or we're going to send you off to prison and make iPods.
Yeah, man. And, you know, there is one thing I can agree with when Obama is going to be doing his State of the Union is when he does start to blame Republicans. Agree with that. Republicans are a huge part of the problem.
Of course, okay. Because they think they're part of the solution, so that makes them even more dangerous than the Democrats. At least the Democrats don't even bother to pretend anymore. They're just like, we're going ahead with this new order, whether or not you like it. It's going to be one world government, and we're pushing it through because that's the best thing for the people.
It's good for you. It's good for me.
Income inequality is the devil, and we're going to forcibly take everything you have and ship it off to the third world so we won't have any more wars.
Well, you know, income inequality is a huge problem, but
sure.
I just saw, I mean, there's this meme right now that I just saw that totally makes a perfect point. It's basically saying, do you think that the rich are actually going to let you vote away their wealth?
No.
There's no way at all.
They're going to vote away your food. What they're going to do.
The people that are counting the votes are the rich. You know what I mean? It just came out the other day, the statistic. Almost everyone in Congress is a millionaire now. You know, the people in Congress are they're not the one percenters per se, but they are in the top 1% when it comes to the wealth pyramid. You know,
if they're more than like a one term senator, they're easily in the 1%, just because if you look at what they've made over the 4 years or 6 years they're in there, I mean, that's already $1.5 million. It's $250 a year. So they're already in the 1% after one. If you're looking at someone like Feinstein, you're talking about what, $20-30 million, maybe more in net worth.
Yeah,
and criminally divested into different enterprises that are government contracted. You know what I mean? So, and that's been proven, and there's nothing to do about it. What are you going to do?
Yep.
So yeah, they are the 1%. They're never going to vote away their own interests. If you get into even the House of Representatives for a single term, you get to make what you made those years for the rest of your life. So they're not going to rock the boat. Yeah, they're not going to rock the boat. And even a one-term representative guy is not going to rock the boat. He wants that $108,000 for the rest of his life every year.
Yep.
Which is, by the way, how can we even stand for that? You know what I mean? It's bad enough there's these career politicians, but then these guys serve one term and they get lifetime retirement.
And they get lifetime health care, and they get lifetime pension. I mean, they get all kinds of good stuff. I mean, the presidential – the presidents get lifetime security too, lifetime Secret Service.
Yep. So, I mean, the list goes on, and it's not – you know, it's not to be unexpected, because basically what they are is they're executives in a corporation. Let's just not even mince words. That's really what they are. They're corporate lackeys. They're just one – they're like the lobbyists – but to kiss. That's the purpose they serve.
Yep. And it's kind of like, you know, why do these presidents need all this protection if they weren't doing so many things that people made people hate them? You know, and that's one of the things is, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but back during the last presidential election, and that's the first one I really paid close attention to, but a lot of these candidates that weren't even, you know, president, they're just candidates. They're getting Secret Service protection and all this stuff, you know, and it just goes to show how hated our system is. I heard Prime Minister of Iran talking the other day, and he was saying, like, look, my people don't hate Americans. They're just tired of you guys meddling in everybody's business, including our own. You know, he made perfect sense. I mean, it's everything that we talk about all the time. It's not so much that people hate America because we're free and because we're rich. Because first of all, we're not free and we're not rich.
Well, we're extremely rich. Let's not pretend we're not. We are. When they looked at the top 85 richest people in the world who owned 50% of all wealth, now just think about that for a second. 40 of them lived in the U.S. So we're beyond insanely wealthy. We own half of the world's wealth. So we own a quarter of all the world's wealth in just 40 people sitting there. So we're beyond insanely wealthy. It's just not trickling down because that's such a Reaganist falsity. It doesn't work that way. It never will. And the thing is, people get duped into thinking a Fortune 500 company is a good thing. It's not. It's condensing all the talent and leaving everyone else in the dust. People just don't get that yet, I guess.
Well, I think they'll probably be getting it pretty soon here.
Yeah. With industrialized food supply, I mean, and water and power. I mean, all those things at some point are going to become, let's just say, too expensive to maintain. So you see, we're going to have to go back to smaller communities eventually anyway, just like we always talk about.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be an economic necessity because having a big, giant megalopolis like where me and you live is insanely, insanely resource heavy, and it takes up everything around it, and it demands so much being shipped in. It's really impractical if we want a resource-based economy to work in the future.
Well, I mean, especially where we're at. I mean, we're in like a desert, basically.
And right.
All this water has to come in.
Exactly.
But – you know, the Iranian people don't hate us. They just hate our government, kind of like the same way we hate our government, and we also hate their government. See, the problem is evident, you know, but it's so funny that, like, all these governments all around the world, they always point fingers at each other, and they say, oh, that Russia's the problem, Russia's government is terrible, or Cuba's government is bad. And then the Cuban people say, oh, no, America's government is bad, and the Russians say, oh, yeah, America's government is bad. How about maybe you guys are all right? Every one of you guys are saying the right thing, except you got to remember that you got to look in the mirror and point the finger back at yourself. The big problem here in the end is government.
It is. And let me tell you a perfect example of this. I was reading up on some of this more of these writers that keep appearing on Obamacare, and they keep because no one's read anything. And today I read something that it shows you government's not only the problem, but they're now the enemy. And let me tell you why. There's a rider inside of Obamacare that if you're on Medicaid and you die and you have a long-term care, they get to go after your family to recoup whatever the costs are. Think about that for a second.
No, that can't be true. This is the Democrats sticking the finger to the insurance companies, isn't it?
No, I mean, honestly, like, you're going to have armed SWAT teams now barging in on mom and dad who couldn't pay for grandma's long-term hospice care and seizing all of their assets and throwing them into a debtor's prison. This is the future in a few years. They're setting it all up.
You think that maybe
you better get going fighting it, or you better get going getting out of here. One or the other.
You think that's why they started arming all the IRS agents now?
Of course, man. Every agency is now armed. If before you were a number, now you're not only not even that. You're a peon now in this new system.
Yep, and our Social Security is our kind of our number. It's kind of our inventory number, more or less.
That's
what we are to all these people is just a bunch of inventory. That's right. How we're treated.
Cattle, chattel, collateral, whatever you want to call it. I mean, unless you're an elite or you work for the elites, you're a nobody. You're less than nobody. So, I mean, this is how the system is going to start constricting on it now. They're getting so desperate because people are waking up. I mean, it's only going to take 10% of the people waking up for it to do what's called the paradigm shift, which ends up shifting 3/4 of the population over. I mean, this is what's happened historically. It's how the American Revolution started. And I think right now we're at 14%. So I think we're well past that 10%.
Yeah, I think the numbers are there. It's just that people continue to – the problem is that within that 14%, there's about 1,000 different factions fighting each other saying, exactly. No, my idea is better. No, my idea is better. No, it has to be my way, or your way is stupid. It's like, okay, I get it.
Become organic. Yeah, it has to be an organic process. Like, we have to let all these factions fight and, like, come up with one consensus before we present it as an alternative to what's – not working now, but is still at least functioning on some level.
That's the funny thing, you know. is that the consensus is already there, and it's like all the major points, like everyone can pretty much agree on the major points. Look, we got to stop all these wars. We got to stop this financial and political system that's all based on money. Okay, we got to stop this police state. I mean, this it's a lot. Everything that we can all agree on. It's just that everyone has their own way of saying it, and everyone has their own way of expressing it, and then everyone is so quick to jump the gun and say, oh, you're doing it wrong. You know, it's programmed into us to be that way, because that's how they want us to be.
They've instilled the whole tribal culture into us. I mean, look at it in our media. Look at it in the Grammys last night with all the freaking voodoo and occult bullshit. It's all there to divide, man.
It's just like a wedge and a hammer. And then they put the wedge in there, and then they use the media as the hammer, and they just keep hammering it through. And then now we're all brainwashed into these ideas that, oh, well, if I have a buddy that's a socialist and I'm a capitalist, well, then obviously I can't be friends with that person. You know, it's almost as bad as racism, honestly, in my opinion. It's gotten to this point where people are just so clicky, and we've been brainwashed into being this way and into thinking that anyone that disagrees with us is an idiot, and we feel the need to call them an idiot. It just destroys anything that we're trying to build into. You know,
well, it's like they say in politics and religion, no one's right. But it's the best discussions because we get closer to some kind of ultimate truth the more philosophical we get into these things. And the goal is to get away from what we know is not working, which is having the power condensed into the hands of the most ruthless. That could never be good for the body majority, the body politic. We need to condense power into the hands of the most benevolent and genius. And maybe we need to genetically engineer these babies, these benevolent super scientist guys. And when they're ready, we'll hand over the keys to them. But I mean, until then, we got to self-govern because these guys doing it for us now, I mean, they're genocidal.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, if we don't unite and we don't get under some type of unifying, I don't know what it could be anything. We're going to be too easily divided. And then one thing can happen and then they could just stampede the whole movement. And then everything that we've worked for could be lost.
Right. And they'll try something desperate like Bluebeam, where they're going to try to fake an alien attack or something crazy like that, where they're going to beam the voice of God into your head and command you to bow down to him or some crazy crap like that. And the thing is, like, we don't need any of that stuff. It's going to organically come to this new ideological forefront because everybody right now is ascending. At some kind of level, everybody's getting a spiritual ascension unless they're, you know, fighting it. I am, you are, we all feel something changing within us. So it's going to happen that way unless these guys get their way and make some kind of crazy, I don't know, I would say a panic situation of sorts.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's going to be a panic. And I think that kind of is what our first topic is about tonight. And I think that's what could be happening or about to happen. But what's going on Wall Street? I mean, we saw the stocks dive last week, Thursday and Friday. They went down pretty far. They're pretty far down today as well. We got this debt crisis bubbling over in China because they basically did the same exact thing we did. And they put out a shit ton of money, and they fueled this huge bubble.
And they have four times as many mouths to feed, and they have 10% of the arable land we do. So imagine their quagmire.
Yeah, so this could be a huge problem because, as we've talked about before, there is a bit of – I mean, of course, China has its own internal issues, but there is a good share of nationalism coming out of there, manufactured by the government, obviously. And just like you said, remember what – Nazi Germany said, remember what Hitler said, Lebensraum, right? Living space. We need space to plant our farms. We need space to feed our people.
Okay. And it's more than that. It's actually controlling what's known as the heartland of the world. And historically, that's been Russia and Eastern Europe because those were breadbaskets. But they have nothing on the U.S. farmland. And of course, they want the heartland of the world, right? Because you cannot control the world if you don't have food to do it. So, of course, you know, our military forever has been able to hold off this advance, and now we're being eaten from within and from without, right? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and again, I know plenty of people that are Chinese that are awesome people and great people.
And they'll fight for us, I promise you, if it comes
and,
to but the thing is, it's crazy.
When it comes down to it, who manufactured this debt crisis? The Chinese government, the Chinese central banks, which when it comes to central banking, let's face it, they're probably the same old characters that are behind our central banking that are also behind theirs.
Yeah.
Okay. So Once again, we're in a manufactured crisis. Okay, where now the stocks are taking a hit, which fine, the stocks shouldn't have been up that high anyway because our economy has not gone anywhere. But once again, it's government causing these huge issues. And if let's face it, if China goes through a big time recession, that's gonna drive the world economy into ruins, more or less. You know, and it's, in my opinion, we just have to be prepared. You know, make sure you have a little bit of reserves out of the bank. Don't keep all your money in the bank. We already see what's going on at HSBC in England. They're already limiting cash withdrawals at the banks in England.
And that'll be harder to do here because people like to spend. So they're not going to – you can't go, what are you going to take this money out for? I'll be like, I'm about to buy a bunch of stuff, okay?
But
they'll charge you for deposits. Did you see that? The Wells Fargo is going to charge you $5 for a deposit now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've already got all the – they've already got the playbook. Look what they did in Cyprus. I mean, they went and just confiscated a huge chunk of people's savings. I mean, that's right. Just what they're going to do when it comes down to it. They're not going to protect us. They're going to keep the banking sector intact.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, this is the classic playbook from the Great Depression. And this is how the chosen few who knew what to do made rags to riches stories. Take your cash, buy silver right now, and it doesn't need to be any big things. It can be like a quarter ounce even or a tenth of an ounce coins, but just buy the silver, sit on it, because silver's low right now. The stock market's going to crash. So wait till it crashes. Take your silver, sell it for cash, and then buy all the stocks at like nothing. And then when they bounce back up, you're a millionaire. And a bunch of people did this during the Great Depression. Now, what would happen if millions of people did this during this Great Depression? And now there's a whole bunch of people with money, and there's a whole bunch of income redistribution there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's
that simple strategy.
That's one way of restoring, getting back to the income inequality issue. The one thing that really drives income inequality is the Federal Reserve. I mean, all this Federal Reserve action, it only enriches the very, very rich. Everyone else suffers because our everyone like you and me that lives, on a budget, our money gets watered down every time they print these dollars out. You know, time they do these bailouts, you know, and all of our stuff should be getting more expensive. Our food's getting more expensive. Our gas is getting more expensive. The water, the electricity, all that stuff's going up. But guess what? The regular goods aren't getting that much expensive. Why? Because people don't have money to drive the prices up. So what you're seeing and you know, the Federal Reserve, I know you've heard this talk lately where they're like, oh, well, we're actually like worried about deflation because prices aren't going up as high as we'd like them to.
Well, but the wages aren't going up either. So
when they calculate this official inflation, they don't include food, they don't include gas, they don't include water, they don't include electricity, all the stuff that we actually need. That gets left out when they calculate quote unquote inflation. So
that's because it's free for them.
Yeah, because it doesn't. It's like inconsequential to them because it's such a tiny fraction of their income.
Oh, you budget for those. Oh, sorry, I forgot. All you guys don't get per diem.
Sorry, guys. I forgot. Your electricity bill actually takes out a percentage of your income.
Because they get like $65 a day on top of their whatever they get for food every day they go to work. It's a per diem. I mean, that's supposed to cover gas, food, and everything for the day, $65. And it probably does. And then they take home 100-something, 50, 200 a year.
You know, I'm starting to look at the dollar bill, and I'm just starting to look at that thing as just a huge slap in the face. I mean, they put the pyramid right there on it. The whole pyramid scheme is right there for everyone to see it, and it just slaps you right in the face.
They use the Monopoly money font and color. The $100 is an orange. What the? It looks like Monopoly money. Other countries soon aren't going to take it because it's going to look like it's fake. Is that part of the plan?
I mean, I went to the bank on Saturday because after seeing what happened Thursday and Friday, and I don't really keep money in the bank because I know how dumb that is. But I keep a bit in there to keep up my operating expenses for my website and all that stuff because that's the only way they accept payment, which sucks. But that's just how it is. I went to the bank Saturday to pull my cash out because I saw what was going on in the market, and I don't want to get stuck where they're just going to say, oh, no, you're not going to get your cash out. And they denied me my withdrawal on Saturday, and they said my account was locked up due to suspicious activity. You know, and I mean, I don't know what it is, but I'll tell you what, it stopped me from getting my withdrawal. It stopped me from draining my bank account because that's what I was going to do. And I don't know if it's been happening to anybody else, but I mean, they can just say, I mean, let's just say tomorrow people started pulling money out. I mean, you know what happened at the end of last week on, was it Thursday or Friday? There was the largest withdrawal of gold ever from the JP Morgan Bank. Okay, so I don't know what's going on. Okay,
well, it's time to buy silver. I'm telling you, these guys that are at the top are dealing with gold. They don't screw around with silver. Silver's petty, but silver's what me and you can buy, dude. I'm telling you, this is a time honored traditional theory of how to make a killing when things are awful. Cash to silver, silver back to cash when the stock market dumps, and then buy all the blue chip stocks when they're at like $2 each. And they go back up to 60, 70, 80, 120. And, that $5,000 becomes like $1 million. Those kind of things are going to be possible.
Damn, I have no idea about stock market investing.
Yeah, that's what happened last time. Basically, during the Great Depression, there's a whole bunch of people that were all insiders, of course, and knew about the strategy. And they all got wealthy, real wealthy. Yeah, so
we'll see if the whole system can even stay in place this time. You know, that's
it'll be something will come up after it. It's probably going to be the petro yuan.
Well, these cryptocurrencies, these Bitcoin exchanges and stuff, are getting pretty robust now. I don't know if you've been watching that.
Yeah, but how hackable are they? I mean, if somebody knows what they're doing, can they just jack you?
Well, it's just as hackable as Target stealing your debit card.
Well, yeah, but then you can just go to court for that.
You know, most of these people that are building these sites, they're cryptologists, you know what I mean? So, I mean, they're going to make some crazy encryption in their websites too, you know?
True.
So I think these cryptocurrencies will probably be more secure than banking, be more secure than cash eventually. And, that's probably what's going to happen after the whole crash. Is the new currency is going to probably be in Bitcoin, and then you're going to have all these competing currencies like this Dogecoin and all this Litecoin and all this stuff.
Yeah. Yep. And we'll get to farm node eventually.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing because we don't want the monetary system being monopolized by the Federal Reserve or by the Central Bank of China or the Bank of Japan or any of these bureaucrats that are controlling the world economy, because obviously they're into this whole pyramid scheme thing where everybody at the top gets rich and everyone at the bottom gets peed on.
Yep, that's what it is. So yeah, just get back to the cottage industry and using high-tech stuff is going to be the way to go for a lot of people that don't have PhDs in sciences and can't get really good jobs in the city. That's what it seems like, the way it's headed to me.
So we got to move on a bit here because we have a special guest on tonight. She's going to be calling in to talk about what's going on in Fullerton, the police state and what happened over there. She spoke at the city council, which was badass, actually, I have to say. So hopefully she could talk about that. But we got to move quickly here through a couple things. New research out of Canada is showing that BT toxins are being found in pregnant women, which was a story that was maybe a couple months old, but new information has shown that these BT toxins, which is what they're basically genetically engineering into this BT corn, this Monsanto corn, BT cotton, BT soybean, I believe they're making as well. These are pesticides that they're genetically engineering into these plants, where the plants produce the protein. And when the bugs bite the plant, the bugs just die. Their stomachs explode. But it turns out that these BT toxins are going in and attacking human embryo cells. So it's making people
sterility.
Yeah, it's basically making women not able to have children.
Right. And then there's also this this glycogen disease now coming out because of all the pesticide use and the herbicide use. It's accumulating in the urine and starting to become, you know, affecting people in that way where it's giving them an actual disease now, von Gierke disease. So it's generally that we've been eating things that are tainted from a purity standpoint so long generationally that it's become a genetic disorder now.
Yeah.
And passed on.
They just approved a new another new genetically modified gene, which they can insert into corn or whatever other crop by Syngenta, which we've talked about before, which is basically Europe's version of Monsanto. Because what's going on now is they're making these crops resistant to these pests, but the pests are evolving to be able to be resistant to the pest-resistant crops. So yeah, now they're just having to up the amount of genetic engineering. They're having to up the amount of pesticides being used. And it's all adding up to this whole toxic stew that's just sitting there in our groundwater now. At least 70% of our groundwater is polluted by
fracking?
Is polluted by by these pesticides. There's a pesticide which is made by Novartis, and it's polluting 70% of our water supply. So and that one is known to cause breast cancer. So I mean, all this stuff with these GMOs and all these pesticides, none of it's well researched enough. The only ones that get mainstream PR in the U.S. are the ones that are basically establishment funded by these Monsanto and by the FDA, which is run by Monsanto. And all the independent research, like this one that just came out about these BT toxins attacking human embryos, it doesn't get any mainstream coverage. Where is the coverage for this stuff? It's not covered. You know?
No, they can't do it. They're the same people that own them on the media. I mean, we all know that. So they're never going to talk about it. Same reason TEPCO never gets talked about, even though they're bankrupt now and they're getting bailed out big time by the Japanese government to the tune of billions of dollars, which, of course, the people, if they could, I'm sure they would uprise over there, but they're too polite.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just crazy. It's crazy, man. It goes both ways, and it's so deep down right to the rotten core. There's a twin – I'd say we have a twin core system of big business and government both needing to be broken up into a million pieces, meaning we need way more representatives for our government so that it actually will function. And all these big companies need to be broken up as the monopolies they are so they lose their monolithic powers because of the money they control and the market share they control. It's just too big.
You want to talk about wealth redistribution? You take these companies that are all crony companies, and you just turn over all the ownership over to the people.
Well, just break them up even, and then you'll have a hiring bonanza with all these little mini companies. I mean, then unemployment is solved, innovation would skyrocket. I mean, this is what we need to do.
Any company in bed with the government. If I had my way, any company in bed with the government would not be safe. They would be.
If they're a crony, if they're a crony capitalist, they're done. We break them up under monopoly.
Hey, I think we have Lisa on the line. You there?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. Good. How are you? This is Alyssa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Really good. Really good.
Hey, you want to just real quick plug all your projects that you have going on right now? I know you're doing the Los Angeles People's Media. If you want to just plug that stuff real quick, and then we can jump into what's going on in Fullerton and what happened with Kelly Thomas.
Yes, actually, we are developing some alternative media outlets here in LA. We have a local outlet that's on Facebook right now, which is Los Angeles People's Media, and we're just starting to do the People's Media, which is a broader group that would be an umbrella for localized groups. But you can find us on Facebook at Los Angeles People's Media, and we're also on Twitter.
Awesome. So Alyssa's an activist in LA. I actually had the pleasure of meeting you, a month and a half ago or so. And we were talking about some new solutions for trying to move this independent media movement forward and try to organize and you know, get this thing working as a well-oiled machine. And I think what we saw happening down in Fullerton these past couple weeks kind of is a perfect example of what the independent media is turning into, where you get to actually be there on the streets watching this thing go down. And I know you're a close friend of Patty Beers, which is she was the journalist which was arrested down at the Justice for Kelly Thomas protests. But what do you think sets apart this new citizen journalism that's coming up to the forefront and puting basically these establishment media outlets on their heels? And in my opinion, they're going to be extinct pretty soon. But what do you think it is that really that makes this citizen journalism so much better?
You know, I think that the mainstream media model for a very long time has been competitive. So you have these competing forces, even though they're behemoths, and even within themselves, the monopolies competing or even falsely competing with themselves, but you don't see the Los Angeles Times, the LA Times working with the Wall Street Journal. You don't see ABC and NBC working together because they have to compete. They have to compete for ratings. They have to compete for advertisers for advertisement. I think the difference with people's media is that people are working together collaboratively, which builds a much stronger force, especially when dealing with the internet or with social media, because if a large group is actually working together with all their different media outlets, you can create a buzz and create a narrative that people will pay attention to, because distraction seems to be one of the biggest battles that we're fighting today when dealing with the mainstream media. And one of my friends said it best the other day. They're like, Hollywood is rickety. It's like, dun, 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 dun. And I live here. Most people don't want to do this. They don't want to make the media they're making. They don't want to sexualize a sky bottle. Like, that's terrible work. Who wants to do that? But when you tell people, or you ask people, or you invite people to engage in social justice issues and what's happening in their community, and they're interested, they're driven, it's not empty, it's not hollow, like what we see here in Hollywood today, where most people do it because they have to do it. They sell out because they have to provide for their family. Here you have people that are actually engaged in what they're making and interested and driven, which actually creates something real that people want to watch, they want to listen to, they want to read, because people are being real, like really real. And I don't think people have seen that for a really long time.
Well, you know, Patty's stream went like ultra viral that day when she got arrested. And I think it raised, you know, the whole profile of your guys' organization and what's going on with Kelly Thomas and how these cops just got away with it. What exactly do you think happened there? Why do you think the jury ruled the way that it did? Do you think there was any kind of like coercion or what happened there?
I mean, I think from what I read, from what I understand, there was a witness video that was shot. So you had like the surveillance video, and then you had actual witnesses on the scene that were kind of doing narration, like Patty would do, and he could call it that because it's painful seeing that. But they were like, please stop. They were like, he's not resisting, you know, and watching what happened with Kelly Thomas. And I believe that was omitted, which I think played a role. And I know that somebody had voiced concerns about jury tampering in the city council meeting, that the person who was the foreman had worked in someone's office. So, I mean, I can't say that for a fact, but to me, it's like to look at the justice system in the police state we live in to stop protecting the police is ridiculous. Kelly Thomas's father said to me that he believed it had to do with the peace officer's Bill of Rights. I guess they're protected. It's some kind of being held accountable for things that happen on the job, and that played a role in it. And I'm not really positive what the jury was thinking, because I know that millions of people saw those tapes, and you can't deny that those cops.
He was so well beyond, subdued. I was going to say he was just done. He was like unconscious, and they kept beating him. So,
yeah.
So I mean, you know, this whole videotaping of police thing kind of originated out of L.A. with the Rodney King beating, you know, and that really shed some light on what's going on. Then people started realizing, oh, well, maybe we should start getting video footage of what's happening, and hopefully we can provide some, you know, accountability and some transparency to these police forces. And that's exactly what should have happened in the Kelly Thomas case. Those cops should have gone to prison. But it just seems that nowadays this police state, I mean, how many stories did you read just today alone about people being either brutalized, their rights being violated, or literally being killed by the police? I mean, it's a daily thing now. Every show that we have, I mean, we do three shows a week. Me and Dave do two shows. And literally every show we can talk about three or four cases of people being shot, killed by the police. I mean, why do you think that this thing is why is the police state getting so insane? Why are police killing so many people? And what do you think we can do about it?
I don't think this is new, actually. I really believe that this has been happening in black and brown communities for a really long time. And when I went to the council meeting, I noticed that there was hardly any black faces in the audience. And to me, in my head, all I could think is the eggs are hatching, the chickens have come home to roost. This is not new, but the communities that had to deal with this, white people weren't showing up to support them, so why would that happen? I mean, so I think this has been going on for a long time and maybe gradually increasing the level of violence and the level of death. To me, the police system was built completely broken. It was built to oppress us. It was built to silence us. I think it kind of needs to be done away with. And that is something I've been wrapping my head around. And I honestly think that we can use technology to replace them. That when I looked at the Kelly Thomas case, I noticed that a lot of there was an unusual amount of people with disabilities who'd been killed by cops or injured by cops for not complying, because they couldn't put their hands behind their backs or they weren't following their orders. And I just started to think about it, and I was like, these are domestic dispute calls that communities can deal with, that you can create a phone chain for, that you can have volunteers for. And when I really thought about it, I was like, I think you can do community-based programs, but I think you could create an app where you could actually have a support system, where if you have a home where conflict is prone, that you actually have a phone tree that is automated when you hit a button or when you send a text. I mean, there has to be solutions. And so whether that's like on the ground community based, or we begin to actually create citizen peace officers that you can contact through something like an app, you would have a lot less instances in which police show up to matters that, I mean, they really even shouldn't even be there. Like a lot of the instances I was reading, it was just somebody who somebody got killed, not because it was like, I need help. It was because I need help. Like, I can't handle this situation. I just need someone to help me. They didn't need people with guns to show up and kill their loved one. And that's what happens a lot of times, that we need more compassionate policing, that we need things that are de-escalation and not force. But there aren't a lot of alternatives in communities. So I really think people need to begin wrapping their heads around it and say, you know, hey, who are we going to police ourselves? Like people do up north in California. Like if there's a problem in the community in some of the small towns, they don't have cops. But me and you will go handle it. If there's a fire, the whole town comes and puts the fire out. And we have to begin acting like that more, because if we're not calling the cops, they're not going to have jobs.
Yep.
And that's how you deal with it, is you put them out of work.
And it's so hard to do in a big city, but as we get more and more back to smaller cities, we will take that approach. And then the militia philosophy will have to come back, because we'll be responsible for a lot of our own security and safety. because there's just not going to be a lot of money. They're going to try to collapse the system and make us go crazy, and this is part of the whole clampdown before that happens. You know, this is why the police state's being initiated. It's for the collapse.
I agree, but what if we had an app for that? Like, look, if they can create an app where you can call one of those cars that has a pink mustache on it, and you're willing to get in a car and have that stranger drive you around, and I feel more comfortable getting in a pink mustache car than I do a police cruiser, why not? Why not have help, like real help at the touch of a finger from community members? You know, there are people that are like, okay, yeah, I'll sign up. I do compassionate work, you know, with people who have schizophrenia. So there's a button that you say, this is kind of the thing. And instead of having just this broad base, hey, I called 911 and thugs with guns are going to show up, you have real community members come to your door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we have to get back to a state of, you know, individual sovereignty, you know, where we kind of take it upon ourselves, because, you know, we've got to a point now, and it's kind of a pattern that you see in the government. They do everything backwards, just like our foreign policy. You know, these people don't like us because we're invading their land and manipulating their local elections. So we go in and invade their land even worse, and then put our puppets into power, and then we wonder why they keep on bombing people. And that's kind of the same thing with the police. And you know, the sad part to me, and there's this story. It happened about a year ago, but the cops just got let off the hook once again. But there was a young man, a college student, that wrecked his car, and he wrecked his car, and he went to knock. He was hurt. You know, his car was completely totaled. He was hurt. He went to go knock on a door at the house in front of where he wrecked his car to ask for help, and to tell them to call the police or to call an ambulance or whatever. And the people thought he was breaking in, okay, because people have become so insecure in their own little bubbles, and the media has got people so scared of their own shadows with this whole knockout game, sensationalism, and all this stuff. The people called the cops and said, hey, there's someone trying to break into my house. Guess what? The cops show up and shoot the guy and kill him. And he was just a college student that was hurt because he was in a car accident. You know, we've gotten to this point now, and we have to admit, I think, that it's partially our fault, because we've got to this point where we're just so afraid of our own neighbors, and we're so afraid of our own people. I have a friend of mine here in San Diego, an activist friend, and she was canvassing the other day, and she went to a lady's house, and she was canvassing, and I guess the lady saw her through the window, and guess what? The lady called the cops on her. She was just putting flyers on people's doors. The lady called the cops on her, and the cops end up pulling over my friend and giving her the full-on shakedown. You know, let me see your papers, let me see your stuff, let me look in your backpack, and the full, you know, the whole nine yards. So I agree that we need to get back to this whole community-based system, not only for policing, but also for economics, also for governance and things like that. But I think the real battle here, because I think everyone knows that the police and the government is basically crap. The government is shit. Everyone can basically agree on that. But I think the real battle here is in the minds of people. And can we get people to once again, you know, trust each other and not rely on this big, bad, you know, Wizard of Oz type thing, which is the government and the police. You know, I think we have to get our state of mind improved, and then we can really undermine the establishment once we've gotten past that point. And then, like you were saying, is we need to start building our own infrastructure, our own alternatives to what it is that is unjust in the world. Be it our foreign policy, or our federal government, our local government, our police force, we need to figure out ways to do that. That is less coercive, less forceful, less violence, cost less money, and then people, I think, would be more willing to say, okay, yeah, maybe you have a good idea, let's try it out. You know, so I think not only are we at a war with the system, but we have to help this war of information that's going on with our, you know, fellow man.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. I mean, I I think on one hand, you have a system that people want to just say, oh, it's evil. And yes, there are parts of it that are completely evil, but also it's outdated. It was built for the industrial era where one thing happened after another, like an assembly line. And we live in like this visually rich technological era that it just doesn't mesh, you know? And that's why everyone's like, oh, it's the system and that's just the way it is. So take your pill and swallow it. But the infrastructure is completely wrong for the society that we're in now. And we're not taking advantage of what's at our fingertips, which is communication, which is technology. We don't actually need politicians. They were created at a time when you had to take like horse and buggy to City Hall. You don't need someone to represent you. You can represent yourself. You could actually vote on your own municipal issues with technology, but they don't want you to know that they're just middlemen that could be replaced. They don't want you to recognize that you don't need one person to be the voice of a community anymore, because that would actually mean democracy. That would actually mean everyone's voice being counted. It is cheaper to replace the politicians and give everybody a piece of technology to vote and speak for themselves than it is to pay for the mistakes that the politicians make today. And that's, you know, the prison industrial complex, that is the senseless wars, you know, but they're so either stuck in their ways or just cartoon evil that it's like a constant battle to get those who are destroying our society to stop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like our communications and our information have gone horizontal now. You know, all this stuff is non-hierarchical now. But yet we live in this vertical system where all the wealth and all the power and all the decisions are only made by the top of the pyramid. Yet all the information is out there horizontally. And now I agree with you 100%. This whole system is outdated. This whole idea that we need to live in this whole pyramid scheme, this corporate capital government, you know, where they socialize all the losses and they bail out all the companies and then they privatize all the profits, and then these families like Walmart own more than 40% of the rest of us. I mean, it's an outdated system, and it's not good for literally what, almost every single person on the planet. I mean, how many of them can there be? I know we just saw this paper that came out the other day about 85 people owning literally as much as the bottom half of us do. And that's 85 people, and we talked about this on our last show. There's so few of them, and there's so many of us. But it comes down to this whole Wizard of Oz type of, you know, guy behind the curtain thing, where everyone thinks that it's this big magical thing that we just can't mess with. Well, guess what? That big magical thing is just a huge giant military, which is made up with people that are just like us. And they probably a lot of them are thinking the same things we're thinking, because believe me, I've got friends in the military that tell me that agree with, you know, 90% of the things that we talk about. That
and there's
these
enough
wars
people.
Are
I was going to say there is enough people now globally that wish to opt out of any government, and I believe that if somebody were to spearhead a movement to collectively group together our assets, resources, we could probably create our own place to try this out. Maybe not in the U.S., but maybe in South America or something.
I mean, I think that's what people are waiting for, right? Like, so when Occupy emerged, everyone wasn't like, no, you're wrong. They were like, what do we do?
And I
do feel like an anti-government movement is brewing, and not in the way that people think about it, like, government, but more like, we don't need you and you're destroying society. But until people have the security, and I'm talking about probably more of the people that are, as you might say, a sheep, until they see the security and know that they can go from one model to another without chaos, or until it reaches point critical where people are willing to jump to anything, you won't have a strong enough anti-government movement to actually facilitate dismantling the systems that are in place right now.
Which there may never be that here, because we have such great bread and circus. You know what I mean?
I mean, I...
I can't see myself ever getting mad enough to want to rise up, but I might just want to go somewhere else. It's a little cooler.
I mean, I think if people see it works, they'll do it. I mean, I think people are stuck on the idea of, like, I have to elect this politician or we'll change it at the voting polls. And, of course, it never changes. It's so Orwellian. It's, like, one face after the other. But if you create, like, a small burst of change that works and they know it will, I think people will begin to sway. It's just they have to have know that that something else is possible.
Exactly.
and see it working.
Yeah, all right, I think
all right, Nick, we're buying land in Peru, dude.
I don't know if it was Mark Twain, but what he was saying, and I know the word patriot is kind of politicized, but what he was saying, and it kind of ties into what we're talking about now, is that at the beginning, when there's so few people willing to stand up, it's really costly to be an activist. It's really costly to stand up because then you have to go against the grain. You have to go against society. You have to go against all these other powers. But once the idea becomes popular, then the price to become the price to think that way or to live that way goes way down. And like you were saying, if we're able to prove that these models work, like if we're able to literally take a city the size of Los Angeles and say we're doing away with the police force here and we're going to switch to a community-based justice system, and it worked, guess what? How many other cities would just fall like dominoes? It's kind of like this marijuana legalization thing. The states now, it's just got to a point where they're just falling like dominoes. And everyone's on board. I can go out and like smoke a blunt in the street and an old lady walking by wouldn't even mind anymore because it's gotten to that point. You know, and that's where we need to advance these ideas to. These ideas that we need to switch back to the community and not to the corporation, not to the federal government. You know, because the government is a corporation. Now, we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to give you a bit of time because I watched your video that was taken at the City Hall in Fullerton when you got up and spoke, and I was, like, amazed by it. You went up there, and they wanted you to address the city council, but you turned your back on the city council and you addressed the people. I just want to give you a little bit of time to elaborate on that and what went on and what you were doing. And I mean, to me, it was just a total sign of defiance.
Much props for that, too, by the way. That was amazing, and we all applaud you over the internet.
Aw, thanks. I mean, I wish more people would do it. When we went to city council, one of the first things the council told us, of course, was that they couldn't talk to us about the Kelly Thomas case because it was in civil court. Well, not that they couldn't talk to us, but if they talked to us, it would compromise them having input on the appeal decision for the officers that wanted their job back. So essentially, we came there to talk, but they couldn't talk to us. And for me, I was like, I mean, what are we here for? So when I got up to speak, I put my back to the council and like folded the mic so that I could address the people. And the mayor was like, you must address the council. This is a democracy. Turn around. I wouldn't turn. And then he was like, cut her mic so that the people outside couldn't actually hear what I was saying. And what I came in to do was to talk to the people because I don't see those people up there as useful at all on the council. I mean,
I'm a Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.